This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. So you're heading to the beach tomorrow. You're trying to escape the heat. You better be sure to pack some sunscreen, load up the cooler with water, and, oh yeah, plug in the car tonight so that you'll be ready to go first thing in the morning. Well, if you're Ewan Pritchard and he had his way, you would all be plugging in instead of filling up. He's the program manager for NC State University's Advanced Transportation Energy Center. It's been a busy week for him and lots of other supporters of alternative transportation. The annual Plug-in Electric Car Conference wrapped up yesterday in Raleigh. The first time the convention's been held on the East Coast, Ewan was there. He joins us in the studio now for a wrap-up of that event. Talk about the future of electric cars. Ewan, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have
you. Thank you for having me.
Electric cars in North Carolina. Why Raleigh? Why now?
Well, Raleigh's considered the Silicon Valley of the East, and we have two major electric utilities here, Duke Power and Progress Energy. Both of those have been very progressive in promoting the use of electric transportation. So there's sort of a recognition of that. They did take a significant risk on us. They thought that we were kind of backwoods people and sort of moving from California. They didn't know what they were going to get, but we blew through all their expectations. And
how many electric cars do we have or electric vehicles in the area?
Right now, there's probably only 50 to 100 in the Research Triangle area, mostly home conversions and that kind of stuff. We have a thriving electric transportation association, the Triangle Electric Auto Association, as well as the Triad has the Triad Electric Vehicle Association.
So. Where's the leading region in the country for electric cars, and who has the most, and how many is that?
Well, that is California, because California had the mandates in the late 90s to have electric vehicles, and so a lot of the car companies put electric vehicles there and got a lot of excitement about them.
And where? So you said how many in Raleigh, roughly?
It's on the order of 50.
So you got about 50 here. In a place like, say, San Francisco, how many would you have?
I would say there's probably 500 to 1,000 on the road out there.
Have we or are we approaching a tipping point where we aren't going to do a segment on electric cars because they're everywhere?
I would love it if we were. I think, you know, when you look at the adoption rates of the hybrids, and that's really kind of right now we're tying ourselves to the adoption rates of the hybrids. Hybrids first came to the marketplace in 1997, really only made it to the U.S. marketplace in about 2000. Right now, it was 1.2% of all vehicle sales last year. If you would call that a tipping point, I probably wouldn't. I would say we're still waiting for that tipping point on hybrids. So it'll be a while before we're on the tipping point for electric vehicles also.
What are the obstacles?
Expensive. Most vehicles, we're talking about a $10,000 premium on that order. The Chevy Volt coming out is about $41,000, depending on what you get on that vehicle. Now, you get a $7,500 tax credit for it on the federal level, so that brings the cost down quite a bit.
Molded cup holders?
Yeah.
Well, okay, there you go. You got me. So you've got cost on the one end. How has the technology or has it changed very much over the last 10, 20 years? Is it advancing quickly?
Dramatically. Battery technology has improved in leaps and bounds. Our center is doing a lot of work on battery technology. Essentially, we've quadrupled the performance of batteries and, in fact, gotten, in some cases, up to six times the performance that we had in the late 90s. And more importantly, the prices have come down. Lithium-ion batteries about 4 years ago cost about $1,200 per kilowatt hour. They're now down to about $350.
Mm. And is that where all the research is going right now?
To reducing the cost and increasing the life.
Yeah. And is it the same technology? We're still using lithium ion technology, or are we looking at other forms of storage?
I'll say probably for the next 20 plus years, we're going to be on some form of lithium, whether that's lithium ion phosphate, lithium ion manganate, lithium ion titanate. You'll see the lithium in the name for a while.
Has anybody done the math if right now we took all the electric vehicles, all the gas-powered vehicles, put electric motors in them, plugged them in, and I'm just thinking in terms of air pollution, taking all that gasoline and oil out of the air, we're burning more coal to feed them. Is how much cleaner is the air, or is it?
EPRI's done a tremendous study that shows that if we moved all of our transportation to electric, we would save somewhere between 30% and 60% on our pollution. A lot of that depends on what pollutant you're looking at and kind of where that pollution is and what time of day the vehicle is plugged in, what the pollution rates are. So.
And I talked about the amount of coal that you'd have to burn. You'd have to increase some of that. Is any of the electric transport movement pushing also solar technology, or are the two not related?
They're definitely related. One of the things that plug-in hybrids and all-electric vehicles allow you to do is plug in at different times. So one of the things that we can do is plug in and store that energy. So it allows us to shift when the energy is used from when it's collected. And solar energy, the problem with solar energy is you can collect it for a long period of the day, but then at night it doesn't work for you. So,
and the goal in Raleigh to have 30 plug-in stations around the city, is that at all related to this conference? Is that kind of an independent decision?
It's all part of one big mass movement. We're working to show the marketplace that the Research Triangle area is one of the leading areas. We are that Silicon Valley of the East, so we have a lot of highly educated people. That's sort of a target audience for electric vehicles. We also have a higher general income, and that's another big audience for plug-in vehicles.
Who's the audience for the plug-in convention? Who goes?
It's the big auto manufacturers, vehicle charging station manufacturers, the electric utilities. So in general, it's those three major audiences. There's a decent number of researchers there, government officials, and that kind of stuff. And generally, it's kind of an annual recap of where we are in the marketplace as far as plug-in vehicles.
When it comes to the, say, auto manufacturers, I wonder where they are in terms of marketing. Are they waiting to see where the market is? Do they want to push a little bit? Do they want to create a market? Or are they sitting back and waiting for some magic moment?
Their problem is they're trying to produce these vehicles as fast as possible right now. They are sort of metering it based on demand. It's unfortunate that we weren't considered on the first round of deployment of a lot of these vehicles. Both Nissan Leaf and Chevy Volt put us on the second round of deployment of vehicles rather than on the first. I think after this conference, they would have selected that differently because our public night had over 1,300 attendees, and that surpassed San Jose last year. So we call it the Silicon Valley of the East. We actually beat the real Silicon Valley. So
we're going to start calling San Jose the Triangle of the West.
That's right.
Let's just start doing that. What are some of the other surprises then from the attendees who came from other places after they left this conference or as they were leaving talking to you? Did they express any surprise about this area?
Yeah. I mean, there was certainly a large number of the vendors there are actually vendors that are based in North Carolina. And I think a lot of people had seen these vendors before. They just hadn't realized that they were all clustered around central North Carolina. You've got people like Siemens and GE, ABB, major manufacturers of this kind of stuff that are right here in the area, but nobody quite realized that they're all clustered in this triangle area.
Certainly, you talked about the two big power companies in the area. They'd like to see this. Is this an economic engine for a place like North Carolina, or does the manufacturing happen elsewhere?
Well, North Carolina is already very quickly becoming a leader in this clean tech environment. We've got most of the nation's leading smart grid development companies here. I think there's about 40 companies here locally that are doing smart grid and smart grid related things.
Smart grid is what?
Smart grid is this new utility grid, or the kind of the utility grid of the future. And essentially what it does is it allows devices at the end of the line to communicate back with the electric utility. And then you can start to manage those devices and say, okay, it's good to run now, it's not good to run now.
So you're managing the time of day and the loads and getting those peak loads down a little bit and spreading out the use a little. And NC State researchers are also working on smart grid technology, right?
That's right. The center that I'm affiliated with, the Freedom Systems Center, Future Renewable Electric Energy Delivery and Management Systems Center, is focused on automating the generation of solar and wind and the use of batteries in electric vehicles, as well as the loads in houses and businesses.
Ewan, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
On the State of Things today, talking with Ewan Pritchard, the program manager for NC State University's Advanced Transportation Energy Center. Just ahead, looking at the National Black Theater Festival coming up in Winston-Salem. You'll hear that conversation on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.